Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
David Fagan, I am the Chief Digital Health Officer for Boston Scientific.
David, thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast. It took us quite an effort to get to this stage, which I'm very appreciative of. Before we dive into your current role and all of the great stuff you're building, give us a thumbnail version of your career to date.
great. So maybe I'll start a little bit with the dinosaur. So I was born an engineer. I was born two engineers. I was raised an engineer, and I honestly had too much education in engineering. And even, you know, by the age of five, I was sort of taking things apart in the house, and which really frustrated my parents, right? Because I couldn't really put them back together until I was seven or eight. But anyway, I was a startup guy. I was a hardware guy, building a lot of haptic devices. In fact, I got an education and PhD from Berkeley, and I thought I was going to be building these kind of advanced hardware robotics. These are haptic devices where you can actually feel what's going on in this virtual environment. Anyway, I was really, really fortunate to join a startup that was actually doing a lot of the work that I had initially started with my PhD, which was really developing these virtual environments for medical simulation and training. And you know, those were not common roles back then. This was 2002, and so I joined, and I started as again the guy who was sort of building these robotic systems. And we were successful, right? And we had built that device. And from, you know, my perspective, we launched over the course of really 3 or 4 years. So from 2002 to 2006, three pretty incredible products. These were products that simulated the process of catheterization, whether it was for phlebotomy or catheterization in adults. Even we had a infant simulator. And these were, you know, pretty complicated systems with haptic feedback and clinical training, and all sorts of kind of virtual patients. And so we developed three of these and launched them to the market. And what, you know, the reason I kind of go deep there is because they were amazing and beat the competition, but we just didn't sell that many of them. And, you know, the market just wasn't that big. And it didn't fit exactly kind of the workflow that the market wanted, and the customer base wasn't that broad. And so from that, I really learned a pretty big lesson that really laid the foundation for a lot of what I've done since then, which is you really want to focus on eliminating the problem directly, as opposed to sort of teaching people to deal with complexity. Anyway, so the startup sort of went sideways. It wasn't terrible, but you know, it went sideways. After that, I said, look, there's obviously something I'm missing here, right? There's something I don't quite understand, because I thought, you know, I was going to retire after this. And in reality, what happened was I just had to go back to work. So I decided to go to business school. And that for me was a truly eye-opening experience. I know a lot of folks say, hey, business school, it's all about the network. But really, really for me, it was just an incredible education, right? This understanding that really opened my eyes of when do you want to leverage technology for what problems, and what problems are really meaningful to solve. So, and that was again, really, really changed my mindset. And after business school, I decided to go somewhere to really leverage some of those skills, right? And try to influence what is, you know, still even a bigger company today. But I decided to go to a company called Becton Dickinson. And interestingly, Becton Dickinson was mainly a 100-year-old medical device manufacturing company, right? It was a disposables company. They created the vast majority of the world's syringes and catheters. So you think, well, what an innovation, and I'm advanced tech, and I'm going into this company that's really just kind of stamping out billions of pretty simple products. Why go there? Well, even back then, I really had a vision that we could start to make some of these simple mechanical devices a lot smarter. And we could do that with sensors and connectivity and data. And even when I was sort of interviewing through the process, I had this vision of, smart connected medication delivery devices. Now, a lot of the people that were working there at the time didn't really resonate with this sort of grand differentiating vision. But, you know, some folks did, and I managed to join that company looking for opportunities and looking for ways to reignite growth across their various businesses. And what we found was really this huge need around medication errors. And this was about 15 years ago. And at that time and a little bit before that, medication errors was the people dying from medication errors was equivalent to a jumbo jet crashing every week. This the major study out of the Institute of Medicine. And, you know, through kind of some change management and a lot of discussions and a tremendous amount of strategy work and synthesis, was really able to kind of convince the business at the time and then the entire enterprise that this was our or their problem to solve. And, you know, the way we did that was we really said, look, the footprint that we have here at Becton Dickinson, right? More medications flow through or are contained in our devices than any other company in the world. So how can we not be responsible to make sure that the right medication gets into the right patient? Anyway, that turned into a broader strategy. And it was also maybe another element of that is really based on so much knowledge and understanding from thought leaders across the industry, from Brigham and Women's, and some of those folks are kind of my friends to this day, right? Who could really deeply understand the problems and the challenges in the clinical space, and then we could meld a technology solution, and that basically was the start of a major kind of strategic shift for Becton Dickinson. Anyway, so that was Becton Dickinson. Then I got a call from Boston Scientific about 4.5 years ago to lead their efforts around digital health. And initially I was like, well, I'm not exactly a digital health guy. I'm sort of software and electronics and connectivity and data and analytics. And then I was like, oh, wait a second. that's what became known as digital health. Those are all the different sort of elements. And I was kind of lucky, right? I had stuck my nose and done a lot of work in places that all kind of congealed into this now industry of digital health. Mm-hmm. And I had also driven a transformation around innovation at the enterprise level and the start of a transformation around, we called it health IT at the time. And so just a tremendous number of synergies that just made sense for me to join Boston Scientific and lead up some of these efforts. But I'll also be honest, I was just completely blown away and enamored by some of the devices and the innovations that Boston Scientific had done as only a 40-year-old company. Incredible devices, right? Devices that literally kind of collapse into a tiny tube, snake up a vein in your leg, open up inside your heart, and somehow manage to kind of cure you of disease and give your life back. And sometimes those devices even kind of capture data, right? And it's not just data like an Apple Watch that's sitting on your wrist and sort of gets heart rate and some other things, but these devices, these smart devices, are actually sitting centimeters away from your heart, generating what I thought just could be incredible data. So the opportunity to kind of come in, start leveraging that data, connecting those devices, augmenting it with digital, adding layers of data and analytics, was just incredibly, incredibly exciting. And I'm thrilled, you know, 4 or 4.5 years later, thrilled to report that those are a lot of the things that we're doing, right? So we're, then this goes into sort of what I'm doing today, right? We're standing up teams to develop digital solutions. Obviously, we had to do some things around the infrastructure and capabilities and services and components that we need to deliver those digital solutions. And we're really driving a complete transformation on leveraging our data, on leveraging other healthcare data in and throughout the healthcare system to really resolve some of the biggest challenges of healthcare, right? The hassles, the frictions, the things that are inefficient or go wrong or that prevent access to care. And we have solutions across all those things that we're driving today. Obviously, COVID was just a huge accelerator, right? It went from being a nice to have. It's good for efficiency. It sort of engages patients, which is nice, to something that's just absolutely critical for basic business continuity and even the kind of the very basic delivery of healthcare. So now it's gone very much from a push to just an incredible pull from every team, every group, every business, every region. And I think that, you know, the other thing that we're learning how to do is really to change the way we work. How do we move to this agile, lean, iterative development process and really create an organization that can respond very quickly to new learnings and kind of new external stimuli, whatever they are. And because we had done a lot of that kind of groundwork when COVID hit, we were actually able to respond, you know, really quickly and maintain kind of business continuity and ensure that a lot of ensure the patients just could continue to get our product and that we could actually engage patients and customers and physicians and health systems in a way that wasn't just physical, right? But that was virtual.
Right. Wow. Well, what a background. First of all, it's, you know, very diverse career timeline. And thank you for sharing that. Very interesting. And from a standpoint of what you've been working on for the past couple of years, I would imagine that a lot of research goes into that. So a lot of reading in terms of where the industry and the market are going. So in terms of the trends that you're mostly excited about, you're very passionate about these days, talk to us a little bit about that, whether that's a digital health or any other space that you're very interested in, and what's kind of the next big thing on David's radar.
Yeah, no, I'll probably speak to digital. I mean, there's incredible innovation across healthcare, right, and basic science and genomics and everything else. But I'm deep in digital, and I'll probably focus on that. And what we see even today is really a move to tele-everything, right? That drives access, convenience, efficiency, and the way we envision this happening is really whether you're going to need physical care, right? You're going to need operations, you're going to need devices, you're going to need that in-person contact. But I firmly believe that every interaction, every physical interaction is going to be preceded by some kind of remote or tele-interaction. I call this tele-first care. And that really sets the foundation. So what are the implications of that? And we're already seeing a lot of this tele-everything and tele-first care. Well, one of the main implications of that is that every time you now have a computer-mediated interaction, right? There's some kind of computer in between me and you or me and my physician or the physician and another physician, let's say, that two things. One is that you need data, right? You can't just connect remotely without having the patient's background, understand the context, other things, but also that computer-mediated interaction actually generates data. I can start to capture the images, I can capture data from your wearables. And for the first time in healthcare, that means we actually have that data that is contextual, that's patient-specific, that's relevant, that's kind of clean, right? One of the biggest challenges in healthcare historically was just both a lack of data and that the data was just incomprehensible very often. But now, because of all this tele-engagement, you have really, really clean, relevant data. Great. So now you have the data. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means now you have data to power artificial intelligence, right? Now you have enough sort of input output data coming out of these things to say, hey, I can write an algorithm to understand that, or I can look for a signal, right, from either the wearable, or I can look for a signal just from the video capture that we have because of our television. So I really think that AI has gone through a up and down hype cycle, but right now with this proliferation of data, and we're sort of at a low point in the AI hype cycle, which I think should be the exact opposite. Right now we should be getting incredibly excited about AI and what it can do, because now we have sort of the raw fuel to power AIs, and that's growing, you know, exponentially and geometrically. So I think, you know, that's super exciting. And then the other piece is, and this is going to be a challenge when you have tele everything or tele first care, you have to figure out how to do hybrid care, right? How do you kind of balance the virtual, and how do you connect the virtual to the physical, and how do you capture the information from the physical back into the virtual or the computer based? And so I think that's really going to be this next wave of innovation, right? How do we create seamless hybrid care? And I think that'll keep us busy probably for the next, you know, 2 or 3 years, if not four at least. But I think, you know, if you were to ask, like, those are the trends today. I don't know if you want me to get into the future, but I think the future, you know, 5, 6, 7 years from now is just incredibly exciting, because I envision something that looks like almost like hyper care, right? It's not in-person care. It's not just telecare. It's not just hybrid, but it's literally hyper care, where it's not just, you know, the in-person interaction plus the interaction plus the remote interaction with your doctors, but it's remote patient monitoring. It's information from your watch. It's information from your implantable. It's the home diagnostic. It's the weight scale. It's the best practices being pulled in literally from clinical trials all over the world and CT scans. And now you have, you know, just so many data sources that, because of the incredible advances in technology and sensing and everything else, you can actually synthesize into personalized, you know, almost invisible hyper care that you don't even realize is sort of being that you're being taken care of along the path. And that's I think is just an exciting vision, and all the you know, all the trends, all the technologies are really coming together to enable that.
Right, absolutely. That's super exciting. And thank you for sharing some of those examples. And to take that a little bit further, Boston Scientific, you know, sounds like a very innovative culture at the root of its DNA as a company in general. And for you to be, you know, the kind of the head of all digital, to continue foster such culture, you know, such environment of innovation, is probably one of the top priorities for you and your teams. What strategies really help you succeed in that space, especially where you come into an environment that's already so innovative? What motivates you and your team to continuously improve, continuously innovate from that standpoint?
The, you know, digital is innovation. And let me unpack that a little bit, but it just goes to show how important and linked innovation is with digital. Before we get into that, I also want to say that, you know, Boston Scientific is just an incredible company. Like, I mean, innovation and I would say, you know, risk taking for the greater good is just absolutely embedded in the DNA, has always been, and that's kind of how the company got started. And I think that's why it's a great place to do digital innovation. I think what I have tried to bring, and a lot of folks across the company also, is how do you innovate in digital, which is really, you know, in many ways a unique animal. I drove innovation at Becton Dickinson, and it was much more sort of a top-down process of getting ideas, right? If I'm an idea, how do I get matured and proven and kind of scale into a larger strategy? But digital innovation is different. And here are a couple of reasons why. first of all, unlike medical devices, you don't really have sort of IP protections, right? You can't make a device, you get some protection or some regulatory protection. And then you have something unique and differentiated for the next, 17 years. Well, that's really rare in digital, right? And so because you don't have those IP protections, digital innovation is all about how fast your company can learn and adapt and react and build on that learning to drive value, right? Value for customers, for physicians, for patients, for health systems. And so what does that mean? Well, how do you create that sort of super fast learning and action organization? And that's really what we've been driving at Boston Scientific in the digital realm, right? So we've at sort of the highest level, the way you can think about it is, how do you bring that startup culture inside the walls of a highly regulated and appropriately regulated medical device company, right? You want to get that lean, iterative, agile experimentation and rapid release of solutions, minimally viable, and then build on them. But you have to also ensure safety. You have to ensure efficacy. You have to ensure compliance and all the data, data privacy laws, and obviously security. And so what we have done is we think we've really sort of cracked that in terms of creating a structure and a process that integrates all those things in a really novel way to develop solutions. So for example, we use lean startup and user-centered design, and we have minimally viable products that we launch and with small and empowered teams that can again learn, pivot, iterate quickly to drive innovation. And that's really what you need to differentiate in digital, right? It's not like innovate and stop. It's continuously innovate. You got to create the organization that really does that. And that's what I think is our real secret sauce, is figuring out how to do that, which is done in the consumer space, but figuring out how to do that in the medical device space.
As a leader and an executive, surrounding yourself with A players, with top performers, is, I'm sure, at the top of your mind 24/7, whether you're actively recruiting or not. Tell us a little bit more about your talent acquisition strategies. How do you attract the top talent? And then I would love to spend some time, taking that a little bit further to talk about the interview process and how you go about that.
Sure. Well, it's not easy for the interviewee, I'll tell you that. But talent is it has to be top of mind. It's always been top of mind for me. But now there really is a war for talent, especially in the space, especially in digital. And what we really look for is that kind of diversity of experiences and capabilities, because the future solutions aren't just going to be, data products or kind of connectivity products or Internet of Things products, or they really will span. So we do look for people with both that diverse set of experiences, that openness, the rapid learning, the ability to iterate. But I think we actually have an incredible value proposition, and sort of thankfully, this generation of talent and the next few generations of talent that are coming up are really mission driven, right? So they are purpose driven. They want to have impact. They want to work hard, but they want to they want to know that their work results in some benefit. And in that sense, I think we have an incredible edge against any other industries. And I personally think we have an edge against other even companies. But as an industry, the fact that you can come in, write a line of code, help a patient, or even save a life, or develop an AI algorithm that'll prevent suffering, or that'll keep people out of the hospital, or that'll, save the life of somebody's father or family member, it's an incredible value proposition, and it really, really resonates with this generation. So a lot of what we do is we connect the dots there, right? We explain that if you are purpose driven, and I would say that, you know, so much of the medical healthcare industry is filled with purpose driven leaders and people. Like, I don't know anybody who's not here at least partially for that purpose. And so we tell that story externally, right? And we manage to get some really passionate top talent, and they work I would say harder than any other industry because they understand what's at the other end.
Right. Absolutely. I think that's definitely a very interesting outlook into just the overall concept of this talent acquisition, talent retention, which is, you know, a very passionate topic of mine. We could probably spend the rest of the podcast talking about this. But to take that a little bit further, another area that's very fascinating to me, which is very difficult to master. I'm yet to see anybody to be really good at interviewing, mainly because a lot of that from my past experience and observations is a lot of interviews are based on that past personal experience rather than an outlook into what is the strength that's missing on our team and versus a lack of weakness that we can tolerate in that particular candidate that we interview. So tell us a little bit more about your approach towards the interviews. What types of questions do you ask? And more importantly, what do you look for in the responses when it's your time to meet with a candidate?
Let me answer that in two ways, because I think there's, you know, you sort of, you're hinting at kind of this one-on-one process of how I interview candidates. And, you know, I definitely haven't nailed it, but I feel like I'm getting better and better, right? As we all are. But we actually have a corollary process for interviewing. And that corollary process is what we call pairing. So for our we call them digital health studios, right? For these development teams, we actually take the interviewee and have them spend the day working, literally working with that team. And there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, you know, obviously it's a great technical interview if the person is an engineer or a designer or one of the other skills, but it shows the criticality of the team versus the individual. Now, the individual might bring incredible excellence, but if they can't think in the right way and kind of both reason and understand sort of underlying assumptions in what they do, and if they can't interact in a way, and it, by the way, it never starts out well, right? The first few hours, everyone's really, really on their heels and it's not clear. So we get past that. And then you look for that spark, right? That spark of, hey, I'm building off of you, you're building off of me. So we do something called, for example, pair programming. We have two engineers sitting on two keyboards, but one screen, one writing actually tests that will test the code that the other person writes. And they're doing this at the same time. So there are a number of reasons we do that, from quality checks, and it accelerates and it creates really robust code and training and cross-training. But the idea is that you have this during the interview process, you test this pairing and you see if that kind of 1+1 isn't just 2, but if that 1+1 really creates that 3 or 4. And that's true for all of our kind of teams that operate in this lean, agile way. So and that's key. We've had candidates that we thought, wow, look at what this person has accomplished. It's amazing. And we put them into this kind of studio for half the day. And there's, you know, not much comes out of it because either they can't articulate why they're doing something, or they can't get to the underlying assumption, or they can't build off what somebody else does. And very often that's not the person for us, because in general, we're not looking for kind of the ultimate rock star. We're looking to ensure that that team is sustainable and that culture is spreadable, and that the whole capability that we're building is scalable. And so in that sense, it can be quite unique. And we think that's, you know, a unique part of that process, especially in the med tech world. But then, to answer your other question, kind of, you know, how do I interview? And I first I would say that I probably wouldn't want to be on the other side of an interview with me. at least not these days, right? It can be quite challenging. And what I really try to do is I try to find a few spaces to go very, very deep, right? And I ask the five whys, right? You ask why five times in a row. And at some point, you get the candidate to think, right? At some point, they've usually mastered the three whys, and then you go why and why again. And that's when you see how they react when maybe they don't know or they haven't thought about it. And what's really important in the interview process is that level of honesty, right? So now what do? Now they've reached the limit of their understanding, because look, we all reach the limit of our understanding pretty quickly. And you try to understand the reaction, right? Do they have the courage to admit and be honest about their gaps? Do they have the ability to kind of think in different directions and maybe experiment and maybe push back on me, and the humility to really appreciate that they are at the end of their knowledge? And will they then reach out and kind of partner with me to get to a better place in their thinking? So, you know, you go deep and then you try to understand how they respond. And these are more kind of non-technical, right? Leadership interviews. Obviously, I look for passion. I think we all do. You know, you look for leadership in a sense, not, you know, everyone follow me, but can you be true to your convictions? Can you really leverage the best of everyone? Can you inspire others to get to the best of their ability and inspire teams to work together to, you know, achieve amazing things? So those are, you know, in those one-on-one interviews, that's probably the things I look at when I'm interviewing well.
Right. No, I love that. Those are definitely interesting perspectives, just overall into the, you know, the interview process, because it's very subjective at the same time. And also it's case by case. It's, you know, there's no such thing as specific formula that can really help you improve your batting average. I think it's also a learning opportunity with every interview, at least for me, that I conduct. What did I learn from that process in terms of just extracting the information, making somebody feel very comfortable, but also on the decision-making process in terms of what are the factors that go into just making that particular decision, whether to move forward or pass. I think that's just very interesting dynamics. Anytime there's a human element involved, there's a lot of variables.
And it's so, you know, I don't know what my batting average is in terms of hiring, you know, the best talent, maybe around 80%, but there is nothing more important, right, as a leader, because a good hire makes your company and makes your career, and a bad hire can be better than can be worse than not hiring anybody. And not bad from an absolute sense, just if there isn't that fit, and if their capabilities don't augment where we need to go, it's a real challenge.
Right. Absolutely. Good portion of our listeners on the Ivy podcast are executives themselves, but also on the other side are early stage career professionals. Mm-hmm. That's the reason they love our podcast, is because they get an opportunity to learn from leaders like yourself directly from the source. There's no, you know, it's not so much about reading the about us section of the website. So that's the value. But a lot of them, the questions and the continuous kind of comments that we always get is, if you, David, were to give a career advice, I realize it's a very loaded question and there's a lot that goes into that, but for a 21-year-old self, or 22, whenever you graduate the college, what are some of the things that you would tell yourself based on what you know now?
That's 21. That's going back a little bit, but 21. I might not be the best person to ask, because I'll tell you the truth. I didn't have my first, you know, real job until I was 25, because I went to grad school and so forth. And I think back on my 21-year-old self. I will also say, like, the kids, I have kids now in high school and junior high school, they are so much more competent than I was kind of at that age, and maybe even at 21. So unbelievable how much these folks can accomplish. And at the same time, I think there's just at 21, right? There's such a huge gap in understanding organizations and people, and even if you have sort of the technical skills. So I think there's just so much you don't know and don't understand. So I think my advice is really appreciate that everyone that you interact with has something useful to teach you. And this is probably something I wish I would have learned, because some of my first jobs, like I was somewhat dismissive of my leaders, my managers, some peers. And I think that was a real, real mistake, because first of all, they're in those positions of leadership for a reason. You can almost always learn something from almost everybody. And sometimes those leaders, they might not know the specifics of what you do, right? They might not know how to code. They might not understand, the way you drive, I don't know, engagement on social media. And so it's sort of easy to dismiss them because they don't have that level of knowledge, but their experience and understanding of kind of organizations and focus and big problems and leadership is so incredibly important for your career, because the sooner you understand that, the more successful you'll be earlier. Like for myself, right, I think back on my career, and even though I didn't start at 21 or 22, but a little bit later, but I couldn't be where I am without just incredible mentors, incredible leaders, incredible organizations and teams. So appreciate and celebrate all the people that make your job and if you're innovating, your innovation possible. I think the earlier you get that, the better off you'll be.
Love that advice. Definitely resonates on so many levels. David, the last segment of each episode, I love to focus on some of the, your content diet. What are the sources that you consume on a daily basis to keep yourself informed, educated, and, on anything that goes on, whether in your industry or outside of that?
Yeah, it's, especially in digital these days, I mean, the flow of information is insane. Yeah. The market is growing, whether it's the VCs or the industry and in healthcare, every single component of the healthcare industry, whether it's providers or payers, or health systems or physicians, everyone's going in digital. So it is it's a challenge, right, to stay current. But look, there are industry consortia. I'm a huge fan of Rock Health. Health Excel is another one that's great and up and coming. I'm also, in my career, it's a little bit unique. I'm pretty fortunate to be involved in numerous sort of communities and bodies, whether it's governance bodies or kind of industry consortia, think tanks, those types of things. Incredibly helpful. And I also, it's mutual, right? You contribute what you learn from others. Those are very important. So I would definitely encourage folks to get engaged with all of those things. And they're always looking for volunteers. They're always looking for arms and legs, and they can be very useful. The VC community, deals that are happening, I'm very close to both personally and try to keep track of what's going on in the startup world. I just have to say that I really often build on my team. My team very often brings me incredible awareness of what's going on in the space, and my company broadly has Boston Scientific has opportunities and people who actually synthesize a lot of what's going on in the external market, and that's actually super helpful, right? That those are some of the benefits. I'd also say that while you're never going to be fully up to speed on everything that's happening across the world, so It is so important to learn by doing, right? And so even if you're volunteering, if you don't have a full-time job, how can you start to do something? Because only when you really start to do something do you really appreciate both the complexities and what you're trying to accomplish. And so if you're doing and you're reading and you're building off the insights of others, there's a real synergy there. Because if you're only hearing about things second or third hand, it's really tough to it's tough to internalize that in a way that's going to translate into really meaningful impact for you.
Right, absolutely. I love these recommendations. And last but not least, what are you currently reading, and what is one book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Oh gosh, I think I'm in between books now. I'm about to start. I love old economists. Milton Friedman is one. I'm on his second or third book. I think there's just it's amazing how much certain people figured out about some of our current problems even 60 or 70 years ago. So yeah, I'm a fan of Milton Friedman, and I think it's super interesting to hear his predictions and what works and what doesn't. I'm actually quite so the economics area I think is really interesting to me and has a lot of insight. Anyway, that's what I'm about to start reading. I'm in between books at the moment. We're quite busy, as you can imagine. But in terms of a book recommendation, the thing that really helped, the one that really helped my career, and we even had the author Eric Ries speak at our leadership company enterprise leadership meeting. Eric Ries and his Lean Startup book, and the follow on to that, The Startup Way. I just think it has so many of the answers that you need to drive innovation, especially in digital, but even beyond digital, right? In large organizations, and from kind of that book, and a couple of others, but really that book was so seminal in helping us figure out how to unlock digital innovation across Boston Scientific. I think we still go back to it sometimes, and we still point out to, when we didn't follow some of those steps. The thing I love about Eric Ries is also the humility, right? So he'll be the first to admit, like, he's still learning and still improving. And so I'm looking forward to his next book with the next set of answers. But that was a real game changer for me personally, and I think for us as an organization.
Well, that's super cool. Definitely resonates on so many levels, and love that book. Just to add to that, so one of the books that I continuously keep quoting, especially when we talk about interviewing and talent acquisition, is by Ben Horowitz, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things. It's a lot of things in terms of the startup world where we all live in, the venture capital, dealing with investors. For me, that's a huge passion of mine. So definitely thanks for that recommendation. And we'll make those titles available in the show notes. David, I can't thank you enough for this very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of guests on Ivy Podcast to do a follow-up recording in about a year. So we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see how much of change transpired and if everything still makes sense. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you.
Oh, I'd love to, John. That's great. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And I hope something got got something useful out of it. That would be great.
Absolutely.
Take care. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.